Corbin Ali back with today's talking point. Yesterday, masked men armed with machetes hacked a blogger to death in the Bangladeshi city of Suleti. Madeline Earp is a researcher at Freedom House, which focuses on journalism and online activism in Asia. She edits a report called Freedom on the Net for Freedom House. Madeline Earp, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
This is the third blogger in Bangladesh to have fallen victim to an attack. For doing what? What's involved here?
So Ananta Bijoy Das contributed to a range of online publications, writing about topics relating to science and rational thought. So like the other bloggers killed recently, he was essentially promoting secularism. He was opposing religious extremism, and it was that position which had him singled out as opposing Islam.
Doesn't Bangladesh have a secular government?
It does, and they say that they want to maintain that position. Unfortunately, the attackers who are carrying out these murders are political Islamic hardliners, and there are a range of political reasons why they're doing it. They were responding initially to rallies in 2013 against the leader of one of the political Islamic parties who was sentenced to death for war crimes. And the people who were prominent in those rallies, which came to include a number of social and political issues, were then tarred by this group as by the brush of essentially opposing the whole religion, which, of course, is extremely sensitive in a Muslim-majority country like Bangladesh and makes them extremely vulnerable to these reprisals.
Have the killers been open about what they're doing? Do we know, in fact, who they are?
There have been different groups accused and variously claiming responsibility for this. So when it comes to the individuals involved, there are differing accounts according to which attack you're talking about. And I should say that there are three this year, but there have been five attacks since 2013, and four of those were fatal. So it's really a very, very disturbing string. What the real issue is that these groups published a list, also, I should say, using blogs on the internet, which singled out a number of people who were vocal about secular issues. So they have been very vocal about the fact that they're setting out to kill these people are receiving death threats, and they're subsequently attacked and killed in public. It's very, very troubling.
Again, Madeline Earp at Freedom House talking today about these murders in Bangladesh. George Packer is a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. Last month, he wrote an article entitled Mute Button, The Free Speech Crisis. George Packer, good to have you back on our program. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Warren.
Do you see what's happening in Bangladesh as part of a pattern?
It's certainly a pattern in Bangladesh. And it's a pattern around the world in the sense that ever since really 2004 or 5, the collision between radical Islamism and free speech has been has led to violence in countries all around the world, really, from Europe to South Asia and the Middle East. And although we may not see connections between events in France, Denmark, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, Al-Qaeda does. Al-Qaeda took credit. The Al-Qaeda South Asia branch took credit for the murder of Avijit Roy, one of the bloggers, who an American of Bangladeshi origin who was killed in February, saying they've taught a lesson to blasphemers in France, Denmark, Pakistan, and now in Bangladesh. So what this tells us is that this is not about insensitive first world caricaturists inflaming the feelings of oppressed people. This is about intellectual freedom versus a terrible form of oppression in the form of personal violence, very intimate violence. And it seems to me that in Bangladesh, the oppressed minority are the secularist bloggers who seem to be on death lists and undefended by the government of Bangladesh.
What do you mean by mute button?
Well, there's just more and more in different parts of the world, not everywhere, but different parts of the world, either state-sponsored or violent group-sponsored repression of speech, and more and more self-repression, self-censorship, which leads people to think twice before they might say something that they think could either get them killed in Bangladesh, for example, or get them denounced on social media in Europe and in the United States. There's just a whole host of political and religious issues that people really think twice now before addressing, and I think that's a disturbing and terrible trend for anyone who cares about intellectual freedom.
George Packer with the New Yorker magazine. Let me go back to Madeleine Earp at Freedom House. What about the government of Bangladesh? As you indicated, it is said to be a secular entity, and yet, according to George Packer, it's not defending the people who are on the list.
The government's response has been very, very contradictory. Now, in 2013, the Prime Minister visited the family of the victim who was killed then, but at the same time, she arrested four bloggers under an internet-specific law and accused them of using the internet to harm religious sentiment. So that quite starkly undermines this goal of keeping Bangladesh secular. Now, that internet law, the jail terms that it carries are now up to 14 years. And the first time anyone was ever sentenced under it was actually in response to a death threat against the Prime Minister. That individual got 2 years under the penal code for criminal intimidation, but he got an additional 5 years because he made that threat on the internet, on Facebook. So 5 years under this IT-specific law. And when people in Bangladesh are looking at the cases of these bloggers, seeing them on a hit list, seeing them receiving explicit death threats, attacked in public, and assailants often escaping, you know, even with police on the scene, it's very difficult to see why that case of a death threat against the Prime Minister should have been, you know, fully tried and sentenced with an unexpectedly harsh penalty specific to online expression within a year. And yet these assailants appear to be going unpunished.
Have there been public outcries about this?
Absolutely, yeah. There's been a very strong swell of support, particularly on social media, because people using these blog hosting platforms are very popular in Bangladesh. People using Facebook, they recognize that these should be platforms for free expression.
Let me go back to George Packer with the New Yorker magazine. The people we're talking about here are not necessarily traditional academic writers or reporters in the sense that we think of people who engage in public speech. The man who was killed yesterday was a bank teller.
Right. And Washakur Rahman, who was killed in March, worked at a travel agency. And Abhijit Roy was a freelance writer and intellectual. These are in some ways exactly the kind of people you want to see taking a central place in a country like Bangladesh. They are educated. They are curious. They're open-minded. And they're full of opinions, and they're interested in science, they're interested in reason. They can be controversial. Abhijit Roy was quite caustic and in some ways got into a kind of online trash talk with the man who's now in prison for having instigated his murder. But this is what free speech is about, and they were testing its limits, but they were also simply expressing themselves in a way that is wholly admirable and is also endangered now. Who else is going to stick their head out very far in Bangladesh, having seen this terrible pattern of very public and brutal hackings to death of these men?
What about the lessons that you drew, the broader issues, the connections that you made between what's happened in Bangladesh and what's happened in France and Denmark and other places? The internet was supposed to liberate everybody so that anybody could make a public comment. Is there a real danger here that people will be fearful of taking advantage of it?
Well, the internet is a tool, and like any tool, it can be used for good or ill. Abhijit Roy and Washakur Rahman and Ananta Bijoy Das used it for good. The Islamists who put them on a death list that led to their deaths used it for ill. ISIS uses the internet to recruit. It's incredibly successful with social media recruiting. In some ways, it's eclipsed Al-Qaeda, in part for that reason. So it also has created a kind of self-censorship in a collective way. There's been some writings recently on shaming in social media that I think leads, even where there isn't a threat of violence, there's a threat of at least such excoriation in such a public way on Twitter that people are very much on guard before speaking out. But I think the real point to make is that Charlie Hebdo and the shootings in Copenhagen were not simply European events. They were global events in what is becoming a worldwide struggle between people who want to exercise this freedom and well-organized and well-funded and quite violent groups that want to intimidate and silence them through murder. And it's unfortunately having an effect.
All right. We don't have time to talk about what might be done about it at this point, but thank you both very much for outlining the problem as you see it. George Packer, once again, staff writer for The New Yorker, his article last month called Mute Button, The Free Speech Crisis. Madeline Earp, a researcher at Freedom House, focused on journalism and online activism, editor of her own blog at Freedom House. But good to have you both on our program. Thanks very much for joining us.